Guardian Unlimited.
Gaith was in London for a few days, and as the news coming out of Baghdad sounded quite positive, I was keen to find out his assessment of events. After all, he's one of the few non-embedded journalists reporting from Iraq, and he's got a very different perspective from Western reporters. Hello, Gaith. Welcome to the pod and welcome back to the UK.
Thank you.
Last Friday, a bomb hidden among birds exploded in Baghdad's pet market, leaving 15 dead and wounding dozens. That and the violence to the north and the south of the city appear a direct contradiction of the US assertions that security in Iraq has improved in the past few months.
Well, it's a complicated situation, like every civil war. The Americans are right in saying kind of the level of violence is down, but in reality, they're not right in saying, okay, the surge is working, the so-called surge, the situation is improving, because you might have less number of casualties, less number of car bombs and IED attacks, but in the end of the day, the same situation that led to this escalation of the civil war in Iraq is still there. As long as the Iraqi government is not functioning government, as long as the government is dominated by militias, by Shia political parties, the Sunnis are alienated, this same situation will continue.
I mean, they say that the casualties have gone down, but in comparison to what? I mean, we're talking about, what, the situation in 2003, 2004, last year?
I read, like, a statement saying the situation has improved so much that we're back into the level of February 2006, and I don't remember that anyone in February 2006 was saying, oh, situation is so fantastic in Iraq these days. It's a very dangerous situation because it seems there is this euphoria of good news, and lots of media outlets are just kind of... People are tired from Iraq and civil war and casualties every day, so there seems this willingness to accept this American assertion that good news are coming out of Iraq finally, which is a very dangerous situation. Because if you remember, if you go back into 2005 and immediately after the elections, January elections, there was some kind of lull in the attacks, and suddenly everyone starts saying, okay, the Iraq war is over, there's elections, happiness is coming, and violence is dying down. End of 2005, we went back to the same situation. So, I mean, you can put lots of boots on the ground and you can impose some sort of sense of security, but in reality, the same conditions are there. We're getting less casualties for many of reasons, but one of them, the civil war in Baghdad has reached a point where most of the neighborhoods has been cleansed of the Shia or the Sunnis. So the killing, the sectarian killing has died down because the function has been achieved. Neighborhoods have been cleansed. That's one. Second, I think lots of neighborhoods now are divided, and we talk about that, how divided Baghdad is, but they've been walled, they've been divided, they've been kind of fragmented communities where people live in and they don't venture outside. So that's another reason. And then, of course, the extra troops on the ground. But I think this is only a temporary solution for the situation.
So, I mean, what's it like sort of actually moving around Baghdad? Do you have a sense that this neighbourhood is absolutely Sunni and then you cross a checkpoint?
Definitely. I'm someone who grew up in Baghdad, lived in Baghdad all my life. And apart from few neighbourhoods which had very distinctive Sunni or Shia or Christian character, most of Baghdad was a mixed city. It's not anymore. When I travel from West Baghdad to Shia Baghdad, I'm travelling between two countries, between two different states. I have to change the way I look, the ID cards I show, my accents, the word I use. It's very funny, once in Baghdad, in West Baghdad, I was in Amriya, and I was using a very specific terminology that only used by Sunnis. And I had to drive to Sadr City, which is a Shia, and by mistake, I said one word, and suddenly all eyes start looking at me, and is he a spy? Is he a Sunni? Is he white? What's he doing here? And all what I said, brother. So Baghdad is fragmented, and the same situation in Iraq. Each province, each city is separate from the capital, is a state functioning by its own.
You'd say that Baghdad doesn't function as a city, as one unity, or it's like Iraq as a whole. It's a microcosm of what's going
on. It's a microcosm of Iraq. Each neighborhood is fragmented into its own state. Each street is run by a different warlord, by a different gang, by a different militia. Some militias are paid by the Americans, some militias are fighting the Americans. But you need to be supported by this warlord in your street to survive.
You said you were recently in Basra. I mean, that's a place which obviously the British army has just left, and it looks as though it's going to be completely under the control of the Mahdi army. Does that function?
It's not going to be. It's totally under the control.
De facto is.
It's de facto. It's not only the Mahdi army, but the Mahdi army is one of the strongest groups there. But then you have the Islamic Council, you have Fadila, you have other militias and other groups, and each control a certain part of the economical, social life of the city. But that was also true when the British were there, so...
Do you think what's going on in Basra could actually turn back and say what's going on in Baghdad and that this
different.
Is how it's going to work?
It's different. See, this is the situation in Iraq is each city, each province has its own wars to fight. If we look at Basra again, the Mahdi army in Basra, they have different goals, different aims, different aspirations, and different enemies from the Mahdi army in Baghdad. The Mahdi army in Basra, they don't have to fight the Sunnis because Sunnis, tiny little minority, very scared, living in their own neighborhoods. But they have to fight other Shia factions. The Mahdi army in Baghdad, they have to fight other Shia factions, but they also have the Americans and they have the Sunnis. So it's different mechanisms that are ruling each, let's call it, each front line of the civil war in Iraq at the moment.
And is what is going on in Basra more an economic problem? I mean, they're not fighting a political battle. They're actually making use of economic advantages of Basra.
Yes, but also it's like the rest of Iraq. It's all about power grab. It's who controls that street, will make the money of that street or that institution, and then he can become more fatter and richer. And as it happened in Lebanon or in former Yugoslavia, it's the same story.
You speak very clearly about there being a civil war.
Well, I mean, I think even the CIA or the kind of the American intelligence call aspects of the Iraq conflict similar to civil war. I call it civil war because for me, when I see people in the same neighborhood fighting, that civil war, when I see the Sunnis and the Shia fighting, the sense in Iraq that there is no an Iraqi identity anymore. People are very, very divided between Sunni Shia, between different political parties, even amongst the Shia and amongst the Sunnis. And when I was traveling in Iraq, in my last trip a month ago, I was traveling around Sunni areas and I see the Sunnis now splitting between pro-Al-Qaeda, pro-Americans, anti-Al-Qaeda, anti-Americans. So I see it clearly as a civil war. Now, people have different terminologies and they say if you don't have certain number of casualties. For me personally, I think it is a civil war. And it's a view shared by many other, you know, media organizations at the moment.
And could you say that there is any reconstruction, any of the American plans for reconstruction? Can it happen if there are these segmented neighborhoods?
Well, if we talk about Baghdad and we see the electricity levels in Baghdad are down to nothing. I mean, no electricity, fuel shortages are huge. But then how can you reconstruct a country when the country is in a state of civil war? And which part of the country you start reconstructing? There's another problem for reconstruction that is in different areas, like you have a power plant in one city in south of Baghdad, that power plant will refuse to provide Baghdad with electricity because they will keep electricity for themselves. Same thing with fuel depots or refineries. Each city and each province is functioning as a separate state. Why not they have 24 hours of electricity in that city instead of sharing it with the capital?
What about all these stories about the Iraqis coming back from exile that's being put about at the moment?
That's another very dangerous line to cross. We know that the Syrians have imposed restrictions on visas for Iraqis. According to the United Nations figures, last survey they did, I think last week, 46% of the people going back to Iraq were going back because of it's very difficult for them to maintain living in Syria. 25 or 26 were going because the visa ran out, and only 14 went back because they thought the situation is getting better. Now, the Iraqi government, it's in their interest to use this as a propaganda to show that people, Iraqis, are returning. But in reality, a lot of the people returning are returning because of the visa restrictions imposed on them or because of the economical situation. And also the Iraqi government is paying, you know, like 1 million dinars for returning families, which is $800. So for someone who's starving in Syria, $800 is worth going back for. The number of casualties in Iraq are falling down for different reasons, but it's not the end of the war yet. It's not the situation is getting better. We should be very careful from chasing this euphoria of good news, I think.
You don't sound very optimistic. Looking forward, do you think there are things that could be done to make the situation better or that could be meet the demands or needs of either or both factions?
It's not about pessimism and optimism. The problem is the Americans always look into a military solution to solve the problems in Iraq, and a military solution can never provide the end for this conflict or the civil war that's going on in the streets. As I said, as long as the government, the parliament in Iraq, does not represent the people of Iraq, as long as the government is a coalition of militias ruling the country with no real authority that can extend a couple of miles out of the green zone, the conflict will continue. The people in the street, the people in the towns and villages, and they don't see themselves represented by this government. They can't see anything happening their way. Corruption is humongous in every single state institution. Anything you can achieve in Iraq these days if you have the right amount of money to buy your way into anything you want. So that's not the solution. You can have less number of casualties, but again, that's not the end, that's not the peace, because the Sunnis disaffected, the Shia are fighting amongst themselves. So how do you solve this thing? I think by kind of having a proper political process that's actually democratic in some properly representative parliament.
And you're about to go back. Are you personally looking forward to going back? Is there anything?
Well, every time you know that you're going back to Iraq, there is this huge pain in your stomach. The moment you land in Baghdad airport and the wind hits your face, it's just like you tell yourself, what am I doing here? It's the most dangerous place in the world, and it's a very, very scary trip that someone has to do.
Thanks very much, Keith.
Thank you.
Guardian Unlimited.